Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. This is the very first episode of 2016. Thank you very much for those who have been following the show for more than 5 years. You have as much dedication as I do, apparently. My very special guest coming at us live from the Uber Kingdom, otherwise known as the UK, otherwise known as the Republic of Rothschild Bankers, England, is Ken O'Keefe. Ken, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Vinny. I'm sure it's going to be fun.
Now, it's a strange coincidence as well, because my friend, my bandmate, Mikhail, was telling me about you just the other day and demanded that we sit down and watch these videos of you debating with... We don't have FCC regulations on the show, so I'm just going to say it. Fucking retarded officials. Like, can't they get somebody that at least has a three-digit IQ to debate you? I mean, there was this one State Department dude who looked like he was overdosing on a combination of Vicodin and Starburst while you were talking. It was my God, the frustration. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, bro?
Well, I do, actually. I mean, you know, the thing is that the best ones, if they were to come on, would be destroyed even more roundly because while they have a slightly more clever delivery, it's still at 100% bullshit. And if you know the truth, you can easily call it. And, you know, so the best they can get are these second-rate fucking wankers who literally... that's their whole existence, you know.
They're too dumb to realize they're walking into a fucking ambush, bro.
It's pretty remarkable, you know. It really is pretty remarkable, and I'd love it, man. I'd love it if Mark Regev, the Israeli spokesperson, or Netanyahu or Ehud Barak or any of these, come on, man, that would be awesome, you know. But that ain't gonna happen, you know. It just ain't gonna happen. These people are purposely kept in bubbles so that they don't have to interact with the public because they're all such fucking wankers and full of shit that if they actually got caught in a real exchange with real people, actually. That's why they have all the security they have. I mean, you know, respected leaders in other parts of the world actively walk amongst their people, but good luck finding any Western leaders that are going to walk really truly amongst the people. They have huge security detachments just to protect them from the people.
And that's how you know that you're a slave. And I feel quite aggressive about it, essentially, because... I was just talking to a friend of mine just this morning before the show about how he got invited to the birthday party of a well-known New Zealand politician. And a thought occurred to me, I'm never going to be invited to those well-known political aficionado birthday parties and things of that nature. And I was growing to wonder why. And here's what it is. It's because I tell the truth for the truth's sake, and they can't accept it because of a lifetime of brainwashing and scumbaggery. All right? That's pretty much it. I'll never be in the in crowd because I refuse to compromise. I refuse to suck Satan's penis, essentially. So these people, I think, because, as you say, they're in their own bubble, it's like being somebody who's dumber than the average American. You become so dumb that you don't know how dumb you are.
Yeah, I'd say that's the reality of the world we're living in. And I don't know, in a word, I think I've captured it. Unfucking acceptable. It's just not acceptable. These assholes are the ones that are basically dictating policy around the world. And, you know, you don't need to be a Syrian to realize that this is fucking bullshit. And, you know, we need to sort this crap out. I don't know how much more profoundly simple to say it. And what I'm really happy about is that more and more people are actually speaking out, talking it with their own words, not regurgitating a bunch of program bullshit and actually speaking the truth. It's happening in unprecedented numbers. And it's pretty amazing time to be alive, for sure. It really is.
That's today. One thing I really wanted to get from you, Ken, is why you started speaking out.
Well, for me, like everyone, I've told this story a million times. I'll just give you the really quick version. Like every other American,
Can I interrupt? I don't want the quick version. I want the deep, emotional, the powerful, the original. on the show, I always ask these people the same question. And the reason why I ask and the reason why I want the full details is because somebody listening will have had a very similar experience to you, but would have not made the same choice. Once you elaborate as to why you made the choices you do, there is a strong possibility that there will be somebody listening who will be inspired, who will then be encouraged to take a stand because they see the similarities between somebody as great as you and them who don't even think that they have it within them to fight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I'm details are important for sure, and if we got the time, then I'll try and feed in a few more details than normal. You know, I really understand very well that when you really do what you feel is right, when you say and do what you feel is right, this is an extremely liberating thing that most people have no idea of, and I look forward to more and more people actually testing themselves to be able to express themselves honestly. And I always kind of felt that way. I was always pretty outspoken. You know, I knew school, so-called education, was bullshit from a young age. I was raised by a single mother without a father figure to really play the disciplinarian role. And so I got away with bloody murder. And when I thought some teacher was full of shit or whatever, you know, I never had any compunction to expressing my displeasure with their behavior. And so I was regularly confronting teachers who I thought were really just not worth anything. And yet I had teachers that I really respected. There weren't as many as there should have been, but you know, the ones that really taught, that actually cared and really believed in what they were doing had a hugely positive impact on me. But the bottom line is that I always had a sort of predisposition to saying what needed to be said or doing what needed to be done, even if it caused a bit of a problem. And in typical kind of fashion for anybody who aspires to do anything good in this world, you know, I don't like seeing people bullied. I don't like strong people preying on weak people from the beginning. I never liked that. And, you know, although I got in many fights in my life, it was mostly because some little bully punk wanted to try and intimidate me, and I'm not down with that. So invariably, either you accept it and you kind of crawl into a smaller and smaller hole, or you stand up for yourself and you do what you believe you got to do. I remember the times that I've backed down in my life, and they still hurt to some degree. You know, I basically did what wasn't what I really aspired to do. This is very few times, but I've done it. More often than not, I've done what I believed was right. So I had that kind of mentality, but I was also born and raised in America and grew up to believe that my nation is the greatest in the world, freedom and democracy, and, you know, whatever faults we have, it's really pales in comparison to all the good we do. And so therefore, no other nation or people have any right to really criticize us because we are, in effect, so much better than everybody else. It's supremacism. Any way you cut it, Americans are suffering deeply from American supremacism. And, you know, it only became obvious many years later, but that was also in me. So I had this kind of very strong connection to injustice and inability to sit by and just watch it and do nothing. But I also had a very brainwashed, indoctrinated American supremacist ideology working in tandem. And it was in that context that I joined the Marine Corps. At 19 years old, I felt at that time, actually, I had a job in a French restaurant. I was a waiter in a place that even to this day, I'd love to go back and work there. I loved the job. It was a really technically demanding job with a lot of knowledge required to be able to do it properly. I know for a lot of people, what are you talking about, a waiter? I'm telling you, there was a lot of things involved, knowledge of the product, the timing of things, customer relations. A lot of hard work, long hours and whatnot. And I loved that job, but I felt like, and I was making really good money, really good money. In fact, that was the first job I ever had where I really respected my boss, the maitre d'. He was a guy named John Sullivan. Fantastic man. Leader by example, big time. Everything that he required of the employees, he was doing himself and then some. Always immaculate, always 100% professional and mature. He commanded respect, and I loved doing a great job for that guy. And I would go back. Even now, I would go back and work there for a week just for the fun of it. But I felt I was getting too comfortable. I just intuitively knew this is too comfortable. I'm living on the beach in Encinitas, the best part of San Diego, with a view of the Pacific Ocean, floor-to-ceiling windows. I've got a keg in my apartment, can pour myself a beer anytime I like, a nice car, a job I love. It was good, but it felt too comfortable. And I knew I was, I didn't have the kind of strength, manhood that I needed to go where I didn't even know where I was going at that point, but I knew it was someplace significant. And so I joined the Marine Corps, mostly to get discipline and initiative, to instill those things and build on that and build my self-discipline. That was the motivation primarily for me to join the Marine Corps. And I bought into all of the marketing brilliance of the Marine Corps. I mean, in America, if you grow up there, every American will know this. The Marine Corps commercials in particular, they're on at the Super Bowl, but they're also on national television on a regular basis. And these commercials implant you with the idea of the Marine Corps as like the ultimate of American patriotism. Like, you know, the Army's one thing and the Air Force and the Navy, yeah, that's all well and good. But the Marine Corps infantry is what it's all about. These are the ones that really go out and do the dirty work to defend America and whatnot. So that's what I did. I joined the Marine Corps and asked for the infantry. You know, they send you into the infantry as punishment, but I was asking for it because I wanted the full experience. And so here I went from this only child raised by a single mother who's spoiled rotten, who's got this great job in a French restaurant, making a bunch of money, having fun with the ladies and partying and all that sort of stuff. And I went into the Marine Corps and it could have hardly been any more stark, really. I suppose it was always inevitable that something would happen at some point to cause a bit of an issue for me. And
well, I guess you got out of your comfort zone. Lickety split there, no?
I did. Yeah, I really did. I mean, I went from one extreme to another, and literally, Marine Corps boot camp is. If I'm sure a lot of the viewers, a lot of the listeners, rather, have seen the movie Full Metal Jacket. I actually was inspired to join the Marine Corps by that movie. If you haven't seen it,
I read the book actually of of Stanley Kubrick's. My mother bought me a book of famous directors and things like that. And one of the sections was about Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket. And Stanley went up to a master sergeant and he says, "I want the sequences and I want all the training and everything to be real." And it was just, and the sergeant goes, "Well, okay, you better be prepared for this thing."
And the guy who plays the drill instructor in that movie is a former Vietnam era Marine Corps drill instructor.
Yeah.
The exact guy who is playing that role did that for real at Paris Island boot camp. And I'm telling you, having been through Marine Corps boot camp, it did soften up a lot. You know, American mothers calling and complaining about little Johnny getting beaten. It softened the Marine Corps quite a bit since the Vietnam era. But every Marine who was in at that time would know that was like a documentary, literally. All of the things that you see in that movie are everyday occurrence in Marine Corps boot camp, especially in that era. And amazing film, truly amazing.
It's trauma-based mind control. Trauma-based mind control consists of a couple of very simple principles. Number one is sleep deprivation. That's why they're all an alarm awakening. So you get woken up by the trash cans being bashed with batons and things like that incredibly early in the morning. You haven't slept. What this does is it shuts down frontal lobe activity and brings you right into fight or flight. It takes away your higher thought function and turns you into an animal. Essentially, that's what they're trying to do. They're attempting to animalize you. At the same time, they need to take away your individuality. Your hair is the first thing that defines you as an individual, so they shave everybody's head, right? You are all the same. There is no difference. You are one. You are not you anymore. And the last stage of it that seems to really, really take away the individuality is that group and silo mentality. You are all one unit. These are your brothers. They are next to you, that kind of thing. But that is really enforced when you have collective punishment. One person steps out of line, like Private Piles does or something like that, everybody gets punished. So you erode the thoughts, you erode the individuality, you erode the humanity, then you have Marines.
And the beauty of this is that while that's what the system is designed to do, I'm living proof that it didn't fucking work with me. In fact, it caused just a little bit of a problem in terms of what I'm doing as a result directly from the bullshit I experienced in the Marine Corps. So I have to chuckle thinking about, yeah, that's definitely the intention. And a lot of Marines do indeed soak it up. But I'll tell you what, brother, there are a shitload of Marines who know damn well the fucking leaders who are running the show are a bunch of cunts and their country's been hijacked. And literally, they're taking orders to carry out policies that are effectively for the so-called Jewish state of Israel. And more people are realizing that. And the irony of all this is that they think that they're being patriotic in the beginning, but realize that they are, as Henry Kissinger said, nothing but dumb animals to be used for the cannon fodder of policy that is never-ending war. This thing that they do by trying to completely traumatize us and mind control us, it works to a degree, but the back end of it is you get Marines who learned a lot of very, very powerful skills, including discipline and initiative and the ability to actually endure great adversity, remain calm, cool, and collected, and do what needs to be done. And also, that principle which can be derided, which you noted, can also be a most beautiful principle, the principle of we are all one unit, we do not leave anybody behind, and we care for our brothers and sisters. Now, if that principle is applied in a broader context, as I do, it becomes very powerful indeed, because I do see every human being as a brother and sister. But I have a Marine Corps mentality in terms of never leave anyone behind. I have a desire to see everyone on this planet live a better life, genuinely. Some of my brothers and sisters, however, are acting in a way which is completely and totally unacceptable and extremely injurious to all of us, to the point where it threatens a third world war and total nuclear annihilation. Now, that is a problem, and those people need to be dealt with. And that's the kind of mentality that a Marine has. So the Marine is in me, but it's manifested, I think, in a fairly positive way. So again, I chuckle at the fact that they're trying to brainwash and manipulate all of us, and some they do, but the ones they don't are a big fucking problem, that's for sure.
You create a monster, okay, and sometimes the monster turns against its master. Now, back in the day when armies were raised in ancient societies, soldiers that didn't accept the program would actually be executed, and they'd be executed publicly in front of the rest of the soldiers, and that instills a fear complex. That's, of course, been softened down to just the collective punishment model. But during the training and these things that you were learning, these things that were happening to you, let's get back into this awakening part. Was there a particular day or a part or a conversation or something that had that made you change?
Yeah, there was for sure. So I joined the Marine Corps, and while there was a little bit of a teething period in the beginning, I went through boot camp very effectively. I qualified as a rifle expert. You know, there's three grades of riflemen. There's expert, there's sharpshooter and marksman, expert being the highest. Every time I qualified, I was top rank, the third award expert when I got out. The training, the hard stuff, you know, where you have to carry a heavy pack over a long distance at a really fast pace, it becomes extremely painful. You really just want to fucking fall flat on your face and give up. It really pushes you to incredible levels where you have to start enduring real pain. And you see what you're made of, really. And I thrived under those things. I really did, you know. And even when other people were getting weaker, I felt somehow, some way stronger. But at the end of the day, after a year in the Marine Corps, I was at a high position of rank for my time in service. I was an assistant team leader in a fire team. You have the leader, who's usually a corporal, an E4 or something like that. And then usually you have a lance corporal or even a corporal as the assistant team leader. I was only a PFC in that position, carrying the squad automatic weapon. It's called the SAW. It's a machine gun that's, you know, very effective. And it's a very important position. So in terms of the Marine Corps, I did my job well. I thrived under pressure and adversity. And we were in that, I was in that situation when I was on a ship in the Mediterranean called the USS Ponce. We were doing our little jaunt through the Mediterranean where we visit and do various exercises and whatnot. And what happened was we were on a ship. It was summertime. It was very hot. And our staff NCOs basically gave an order to the rest of us living inside the ship. They basically ordered us not to go through their berthing area where they lived. And the reason for that is because when you open up the hatch to the berthing area, you have to go, all the hatches are closed. So you have to open up a hatch when you go into another area. And when you do that, they would lose some air conditioning. So us troops who were going through their area were losing them some air conditioning, which meant they were less comfortable. The problem is that they were directing us to do something which was in direct violation of one of the core principles of the Marine Corps, which is leadership by example. Their example was that when you have rank, you can create a safety hazard by forcing the lower ranking troops to travel three times as far to go to common areas that they need to go to every day. And in the course of doing that, they're running into working areas for the Navy personnel who are doing actual work every day on the ship. And moving through a ship in itself is not a safe procedure. There's a lot of injuries all the time. Now, forcing us to go three times as far to get to these areas that we need to go to so that you can keep your air conditioning more intact is not leadership by example. And when I heard about this, it was just normal and natural for me to say that's just not acceptable. You know, I don't care how much rank you've got. That's just not acceptable. And it's not leading by example. So what I did was I wrote down on paper what they were doing. And I went and I found the chief of the ship, who's a Navy guy. And there's a rivalry between the Marine Corps and the Navy to begin with. So this was even worse. And I took this, account of what they were doing, gave it to this chief of the ship and left. And immediately they were given the order, just fuck off. They weren't allowed to do that. They did not have the right to close off a passageway. Only the captain of the ship and the chief himself have the authorization to do that for this very reason. You shut off a passageway and now people are going three times as far and someone gets fucking hurt because a bunch of people are running through an area that they shouldn't be running through. You know, and this is why there's rules. And I believe in rules. I believe that rules are when they are in a proper context and place, need to be adhered to. I don't have the right to run through a red light when I'm driving my car. That's not correct. It endangers other people. That's not my right. So I believe in just rules. And this was a blatant violation of the rules. They were overstepping their mark. They were increasing safety hazards for the rest of us, and all the while just to keep themselves a little fucking cooler on a ship. That is not fucking leading by example at all. So I basically handed over this thing. Immediately the chief ordered that they cease and desist with this policy, and they were like, what the fuck? And they wanted to know who did this. And so they sent it down to their squad leaders, you know, does anybody know who this is? And I remember very vividly when my platoon leader, Sergeant Mays, came down and he was like, he had no idea. Nobody had any idea I had done this. And he said to everybody, listen, somebody fucking went and told, da, 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 da. Does anybody know who this is? And I remember very, very easily what happened, because it was a matter of honor and integrity, which the Marine Corps, that's how they market themselves, honor and integrity, man, the ultimate. And so I thought, well, honorably, I have to say it. You know, I did this. So I put my hand up. I said, yeah, I did it. And he just looked at me. He looked at me like, oh, fuck. You know, what the fuck? And it's my fucking, in my guy in my squad. And I got to go tell my fucking platoon sergeant that it's one of my fucking guys that went and did this. And he did. He went and told Staff Sergeant Stanley. He went and told him, and he called me. He told him, go get him, bring him here. And so Sergeant Mays came and got me, and he took me to this back corner of the ship. And I got to this back corner, just me, him, and my platoon sergeant. And I'll always remember his words vividly. And I had a different name. I changed my name to O'Keefe many years ago, 20 years ago, something like that. But anyway, my name was Nichols at the time. And I will always remember what he said. He said, he looked at me and he said, Nichols, in my 17 years in the Marine Corps, you're the biggest piece of shit I've ever known, and I'm going to fry your ass first chance I get. And he fucking was not kidding, boy. I tell you, he was a man of his word, and he really, really, and you need to understand that in the Marine Corps, infantry no less, that your platoon sergeant is God. You know, believe me, he can make your life a living hell, or he can make it nice and smooth for you. But if he hates you, you're fucked. And guess what? There ain't no complaints department to go complain to, you know. Marine Corps infantry grunts don't bitch and moan, and there ain't nothing you can do about it, so suck it the fuck up. And literally my life became living hell. It was initially, yeah, he punished me for sure, but he almost immediately did the private pile tactic, collective punishment, and everyone knew who it was for. And I found out real quick who my friends were, and I had like two people that I felt I could trust. The rest of them, the whole point of the punishment was to fucking get that motherfucker. I mean, that's the whole point of it. And if somebody doesn't do it, you know, it's going to be even more of a problem. You know, that's the whole point of doing that type of punishment. So trust me, you got to look over your shoulder big time. What's your fucking being the target of that type of punishment in the Marine Corps? And I'll tell you what, it made me stronger. You know, it was the most difficult time. I was looking over my shoulder every second, found out I only had two friends, and there wasn't no fucking way out. No way to bitch and moan about it. No way out but to fucking kill yourself, which I would never have done and certainly never will do. That would be about the only way out, to fucking off
yourself.
You just
described the lifestyle of the average political activist.
Yeah, pretty much. For different contexts, but you know, we all have our stories. We all have our stories. But that's what it was that kicked it off for me. When I realized that I had volunteered to be a slave, and that this thing that purported to be about honor and integrity and leadership by example, that I was being punished for doing the honorable thing, and the punishment was so severe that I literally had reason to be very aware of violence towards me and even death. When I realized that, and then I went off to the first Gulf War in 1991 as well, with the man still in charge of me, you know, in a time of war, this man who hates me is in charge of me. But funny enough, actually, when we went to the first Gulf War, it actually softened, you know, the targeting of me softened. And the reason why is kind of known as a Vietnam syndrome. In Vietnam, it's a known fact that many of the officers that were killed by the troops. They were fucking bastards.
The technical term was fragged. That saying comes from throwing a frag grenade underneath the CO's tent.
Exactly. So, you know, if you want to fuck with somebody, you can fuck with them. But when they have grenades and live ammunition on them, you might want to think about how far you're going. Because that's the kind of thing that happens. So it actually softened up. I was never in any way interested in doing that kind of thing. I was always had the kind of strength to be able to endure what I needed to until I could get out of it. And I never even for once thought about doing something like that. But you can imagine how Marines especially are facing death and just blood and guts and nastiness all the time. You know, having some cunt above you fucking walking around, prancing around, ordering you to do things that are not only endangering you but destroying your soul. You can imagine some people probably get pretty upset about that. So things mellowed out a bit during the so-called war, which really wasn't a war.
Can I offer an analysis here? During peacetime, Marines get bored because they're trained to kill. So they only have one enemy, and that's each other, right? They might single them out if they've got a reason. But in wartime, there actually is an enemy, and that's where they can indeed focus their aggression on. Perhaps that was part of the reason to lax that off. But sorry, go ahead.
No, that's very much part of the reality. And when you put people, you know, if you have to fight a war, then you fight a war. And I'll tell you what, a perfect example of a war that needed to be fought was the Iranians. You know, the Iranians had the audacity to get rid of our puppet, the Shah, in 1979 and put in place of it an Islamic republic, that stands to this day. And when you understand that the origins of this modern state of Iran, formerly Persia, and you look at the actual policies of this nation, you can't help but admire it on many levels. But one level where you can really point out that's truly amazing, and of course no Americans hardly any know any of this, is that Iran has not indulged in a war for many centuries. In fact, from what I understand, technically, it goes about 600-700 years ago that Iran actually had anything that could be remotely called a war. And even that, from what I understand, hardly qualifies for what we're doing today.
As far as I know, Iran hasn't invaded another country for 300 years. The only time they've been in a war, in fact, is when Iraq, financed by the US, invaded them and they had to defend themselves.
Well, this is it, actually, yes. And that's why I say the latest example of anything that could be construed as potential war is that they did pursue a flat-out criminal who had committed atrocities in Iran. They pursued him across the region and actually got to him in the end. But they did not attack the people in those regions. And this is very important, and it shows a lot about who the Persians were and who the Iranians are today. When they went into these major cities, and I forget the details of the cities they went into and whatnot, but it's a fascinating historical account of what the last potential war, if you want to define it that way, was. And when they went into these places that were ultimately harboring the person they were after, and ultimately, when it came down to it, they found out that this person had been released and he had been running off. They did not lay siege to that place and another place. This is an example of the kind of mentality of the Persians. Whereas we, you can imagine, Afghanistan, I mean, a fucking false flag operation with a guy on dialysis who's an CIA asset for a long time. We blame him and invade a whole fucking nation and lay waste to it. But the Persians go in and don't harm a soul. And really, even after you betray them and say you'll turn them over, but you end up releasing them, they don't do anything. So the last war they had was about 600-700 years ago. And the one war they had, which you pointed out, is the war against Iraq. Our attack dog, who was basically following our orders, who at the time we knew damn well was gassing the Kurds and torturing dissidents and all that shit, was fucking Jim fucking Dandy. No problem. Just go kill some Iranians for us. They had the nerve to get rid of our puppet. Oh, and by the way, in 1953, they voted democratically for a leader, and the CIA was involved in fucking removing him in a coup. So when you look at the actions of Iran, honestly and squarely, there is a lot to be proud of. That is an honorable nation in comparison to the way we've been conducting ourselves for so long. So how ironic is it that Iran is presented as this big threat to the world, when in fact it hasn't committed a violent act, an aggressive act as a nation, for literally 6-7 centuries? And when you compare that to the fact that the one that's accusing it of committing crimes is basically America and Israel, who are joined at the hip. They're basically a monolithic entity at this point. And Israel and America have decided that Iran is the big threat. I mean, it really is a perfect example.
And if you put
the world
those two
upside
together,
down, literally.
Because if you put those two together, America and the United States, in history, who has invaded the most countries? Who has tortured the most people? Who has violated international law the most? And whose people are, shall we say, currently subjugated without really even knowing it? And whose people have been so deliberately dumbed down, not only do they not know how bad their country is, but they think that they're the good guys.
Yeah, it's terribly upside down. But I'll tell you what, brother, there's one thing as well. You know, as I've grown over the years, I like to think I've matured a bit. And while I can spit venom about my birth nation as good as anyone on this planet, I also have a tremendous amount of empathy and a genuine love for the people of America. There are a lot of good people there. They're not doing nearly enough to affect the change that needs to occur. But there are a lot of good people there. And quite frankly, you know, just because I managed to step out of my insanity and programming, which, you know, it happened through a very traumatic experience, and that ended up being the greatest thing that ever happened to me. But I could have easily gone a different route. I could have easily been accepted into the snipers. I tried to get into the snipers. You know, I qualified. I was good enough. I met the challenge and achieved the position that I needed to actually warrant it, but my unit wouldn't let me go. I could have been a first-class killer, you know, with a whole bunch of confirmed kills and that kind of shit. I see myself in all sorts of people, including Americans who are completely ignorant about what is happening. I want these people, instead of just getting pissed off at what I'm saying, to light a fire under their ass and wake up as many as possible, because honestly, it's not that people are bad. I've been an idiot just as much as anybody. And because I've woken up doesn't mean that everyone else now in tandem with me should wake up. I mean, that's beyond arrogant. It's so self-centered. It's ridiculous. So not long ago, I was an idiot. You know, a lot of people today are still idiots. But deep down inside, whether it's the American people or the Iraqi people, or the Iranian people, or the Palestinians, or any other people for that matter, we want the same thing. And sitting here fucking spitting venom at each other and saying, you're the fucking problem, no, you're the fucking problem, and all this kind of stuff, come on. Let us get beyond that now and realize that the real game is for us to keep fighting each other. All of us people at the bottom of the pyramid, we're being pitted against each other with the policies of never-ending war. And the whole point is for us to hate the Mexicans or hate the immigrants or hate the fucking Muslims or whatever. It's always hate the evil empire.
Might I offer something? Here's the actual axis of evil. Television, politicians, business, banking, and medicine. Okay? It's not your fault, Americans. Okay? You're currently mind control victims. Right? That's essentially, as I look at my American brethren, and that's how I look at a lot of my fellow New Zealanders. It's not their fault. They were born into a system that is so expert at mind controlling that it's statistically unlikely that somebody will wake up from the mind control.
Well, actually, I'll disagree with you there, brother. In fact, if nothing else, I've been an astute observer of the level of consciousness. And if you go back 14 years ago, we really entered into the greatest heights of ignorance and manipulation and being duped and whatnot. I mean, in the aftermath of 9/11, the amount of stupidity and manipulated reaction that caters to an agenda which had been laid out in things by the Project for a New American Century and other such entities was really about as stupid as it gets. But we've gone from there 14 years ago, and beyond that, you know, let's go 14 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. You look at 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and little spurts of growth, but when you look at the actual progress that we've made as people, it's almost at a standstill. It's just a really ridiculous amount of growth and never-ending war. And we go from 2001 to today, and you look at 10 years ago, and you look at 5 years ago, and then you look at today, where when a false flag occurs, or a supposed false flag, when we see any major event with violence occur, you've got literally by the fact that people are looking at the information and disseminating that information and also investigating the information and collecting evidence, you have millions of people who are watching everything that occurs and sharing the truth about this. That is a massive, massive shift. In 14 years, I don't think people realize just how significant that is. And if you project out with that understanding, this is totally unsustainable for the powers that be.
It's an exponential growth.
Future. Yes, they have no future in this at all. So they need a third world war. And when you look at the policies, that is exactly what is intended to happen, is a full-scale third world war. And the fact that we haven't gotten there yet, I think has everything to do with the fact that while many of us are completely in the dark, many of us are waking up, and there are many people within the system itself at top levels who have not acted in accord with their conscience yet, but the powers that be know damn well that they exist, and if the wrong domino falls, it could set off a chain reaction, and they will be done sooner than anything. So for all their power and all their might, they are losing, and they know it. And they need a third world war. So this is an amazing time. As much as we can harp on about the masses and how fucking ignorant they are and whatnot, that growing minority is what really matters. That is what really is going to shape this world and define whether we survive ourselves and literally thrive in abundance in a just and peaceful world, or we destroy ourselves. And that's going to happen probably within the next few years, if not even this year, if we don't get it right. So I'm actually realistically optimistic. I see the ignorance. I'm very aware of that. But there are ever-growing numbers of people who are looking at the world in a different way and recapturing the ability to think for themselves again. And that is truly, truly promising, inspiring, and it's why I'm realistically optimistic.
Well, I think there's an old saying, never underestimate the power of a small, determined minority to change the world, because in truth, it's the only thing that ever has.
Margaret Mead.
Now, I also... think that trauma is a big part of the wake up process. You know, you got to lose your job or you got to lose a loved one or something like that. And then you get into this blame mentality. First you go, I'm a victim. And then you go, ah, there's actually a culprit here. It might be the medical industry or it might be the politicians or it might be the cops or something like that. And then you try to get justice against them. At some point, you achieve an awakening when you realize that this trauma is not just happening to you. It's actually happening to a lot of people. Then you face an even bigger choice, whether or not you are going to use this information that other people have not acquired through the pain that you have experienced to become a predator or a guardian.
There was a
moment in your life where this happened, because I feel we just kind of got off track from your story there. So you were in what's it called? You were in Gulf War One, and your kind of trauma from your sergeant was starting to wane a little bit, considering the combat situation you were in. But before we just continue that, I found something that I wanted to read out, because it really does hold to what we were saying before about the awakening. The New World Order has been quite successful at brainwashing most people into believing there's no such thing as a New World Order. The rest of us often think that it's the rest of people sometimes think that it's all powerful and cannot be resisted. But in my opinion, people give it far too much credit, because if controlling the world was your goal, chief among your objectives would be to confuse people so that they don't know what they're dealing with, and secondly is to implant a feeling of helplessness that whatever's being done can't be stopped. Now, I do not hold to that philosophy. I prefer the endless war model for my life, which is namely, number one, I'm going to die anyway, so I'd rather die fighting. Number two, I probably can't win, but I have a moral obligation to resist. Number three, I'm terrified of what might happen to me, but I'm even more frightened of doing nothing. And number four, just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Number five, don't worry, it's just the end of the world. And the last one, number six, don't stress, things are probably a lot worse than you think they are.
Yeah, that's good. I agree. I mean, never lose your sense of humor. God help you if you lose your sense of humor, boy. There's so much darkness in this world. If you don't see the irony and the humor in all of this madness, it gets really, really dark then. But there's no reason why we can't have fun, actually. I believe that this idea that being an activist or a compassionate, conscientious human being is all drudgery and sacrifice and no. When you truly do things for the benefit of others, truly, with no ulterior motive, no expectation of reward, you do it out of the goodness of your heart, and you genuinely give what you can. I am a practitioner of this principle. It works. What comes around goes around. The blessings, they accelerate the more good that you do. And even if you don't end up getting to fulfill all of your goals and whatnot, if you can live one day feeling truly a part of something bigger than yourself and live in a space where you have respect for yourself and bow to nobody, this is a great place to live. So more and more people, I think, once they get a taste of that, to like be who they really are, becomes very, very intriguing, to say the least. And it really spurs people to experience it more. And that's what's happening. And it's beautiful. It really is.
You'd be surprised what people will accomplish if they feel like they haven't got a choice. So let's get back to Gulf War One and your awakening.
Right. So, he was consistent, my staff sergeant, my platoon sergeant. He was very consistent. I mean, there was a little bit of a lapse when I was in the first Gulf War. But then, we come back. And for 2 years, basically, I dealt with bullshit, one problem after another. And I wasn't willing to give them anything other than that which they could take away. I basically reached a point where I didn't give a shit. I had no respect for my leadership, and I was just biding my time until I would get out. And eventually, there's some stories in there while I was in. I went to jail for 30 days for having taken steroids. This was common. I only took it like 4 or 5 times, nothing really compared to what's being done all the time. And as I said, it was actually encouraged at that time. I mean, does the Marine Corps give a fuck about your health in the later years? Hell no. They'd rather you fucking die and not be a burden on the system. The bottom line is I went through all of that and it made me stronger. And I vowed when I got out of the Marine Corps that I would never give up my freedom again, and that I would exercise my freedom to the hilt. And because of the trauma of having my worldview destroyed in one fell swoop with the abuse of power in the Marine Corps, I now was able to receive information that previously I never would have heard. So, you know, if you had said, burning the flag is it's your right. I would have, if you really wanted to push it, I would have been one of those guys who would wanted to fucking punch you out. You know, who the fuck are you? I mean, that's how ignorant I was and how aggressive I was. But you know, I changed, you know, those things no longer bothered me. If somebody said that, I'd say, well, why do you think that? And I would listen. And if their arguments made sense, I would receive it. There was a lock. There is a lock on all of our minds through programming and indoctrination. They've got a lock on it. And if you can manage somehow to get the key and unlock that, or to have it smashed to pieces, as was the case for me, when the lock gets fucking smashed to pieces and you're now able to use your functioning brain again and process information in a way that's not conditioned or programmed, you will learn rather quickly, believe me. And that's what happened. And I sought out the kind of literature that would teach me more about the world I lived in. So naturally, history was a big part of that. I studied anthropology as well, philosophy, sociology, and really looked at different angles. And the more I learned, the more I realized, holy fucking shit, everything you've been told, everything, almost without exception, is exactly the opposite of the truth, as upside down as it gets. And that shit made me angry, really angry. I was realizing with every new piece of wisdom, I was realizing how stupid I had become. And when you have to face it, you've been a chump. You know, we all have to face it to one degree or another. We got to face it, you know, and that's hard for people. And I understand that. It's not nice to be able to, you know, have to look at yourself and say, you're a fucking idiot and you've been a chump and someone else has been using you and your fucking brothers and sisters, and you've let your country be flushed down the toilet. You know, that's the truth. That is the truth. And, you know, you got to face it. And of course, most people aren't going to want to do that. But for me, the process was so powerful. The anger I felt was transmuted into energy. And the energy was for truth, the seeking of truth. And, you know, I've been fortunate with a lot of good sources of information. And eventually you reach a point where it's really all about, you know, connecting the dots and being able to have a holistic understanding of how the world functions. And it's not nearly as complicated as most would have you believe. It's actually fairly straightforward and simple once you can think for yourself. But the problem for the powers that be is that more and more people are actually regaining the capacity to think for themselves. And they don't necessarily agree with what I'm saying. In fact, it's a very unique path for each one of us. But the bottom line is, no matter how you get there, we're all coming to the same place. We're all coming to the same place. And this world, as it is, I say again, unacceptable. This is not cool. And if you have kids, really, if you have kids, are you serious? Are you seriously going to stand as a fucking observer on the sidelines while the world passes you by and hand that shit over to your children without even engaging? I mean, that is disgraceful.
Well, not only watching the world that they're going to be living in be destroyed, but you're also leading by example and teaching them that that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Into an even worse hell than we have. And it is pure hell for many of the billions who inhabit this planet. It is pure hell for many of them. So this is something we have to face. And I'm eminently confident that we have everything we require to affect a better world, one that people won't even recognize, because literally everything is upside down. I mean, literally. So, you know, the government and the politicians who say they want peace, in truth, they're saying they want war. I mean, everything is pretty much reversed. Everything we've been told that has virtue is almost always nefarious and destructive, and everything that's vilified actually has real beauty oftentimes within it.
Since I became a journalist, I developed two very big parts of my personality that weren't there before. One of them is being incredibly cynical, and the other is being incredibly jaded. Now, when you're cynical and jaded, you suddenly become a fuckload more accurate when you're analyzing what the enemies of humanity and the politicians and the business people do. Because guess what? They are cynical and fucking jaded. So I found that now I'm right. Like, I'll just assume something straight off the bat as soon as I hear like one sentence come out of a politician's mouth or whatever. And I'm, and 90% of the time I'm correct. And the 10% of the time that I'm wrong, it's because things are worse than I could possibly imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you're alone at all in that experience, brother. It really, if it doesn't beat you down, you can really seek out the truth, and it can take you to a place that's not very good. I just put out a video, you know, the cynic is the tyrant's best friend. And the basic crux of the argument is that if, you know, this is why they bombard us with negativity. I mean, you know, it's just all fucked, isn't it? You know, it's just one murder and rape and corruption and blah, blah. That's what the news is largely. And yet, when you look at our most serious problems, really, if you look at them and you have any kind of insight, any kind of real wisdom, you'll know very quickly that we can solve literally every problem that we're facing has a solution. And I mean everything. We have the ability to live in a state of abundance and basically have the kind of infrastructure for all the types of things that you need in a healthy society, for education, for real health care, as opposed to drug dealers known as pharmaceutical industries poisoning the population. We can have real wealth on real terms for everyone with a sensible approach to life, and using this amazing place that we are as human beings, able to manipulate our environment to such a radical degree, we have the ability to create an existence for ourselves which is beyond the normal predator-prey paradigm. The only real predator that we have to fear is ourselves. We're the fucking problem. And really, we're the solution. And we can solve these problems. You know, free energy is sitting there waiting for all of us. It's there. It absolutely is there. It's been there. You know, Tesla and others have quantified this for a long time now, well over a century, and I'm sure it's been around for centuries and millennia before that. We have the ability to free ourselves of all of these wars based on oil. We don't need to use oil at all. Not one bit. We can use hemp. We don't need plastic, and we don't need the fucking petrol or diesel that we get from oil. We have other solutions. We don't need to have war. We don't need to have people who are a bunch of fucking criminals defying all of the will of the people every fucking election cycle, same bullshit promises manifesting and catering to the bankers. These people work for the bankers. We don't need to have people who work for the bankers. Why do we have to have that? Why do we accept that that's the only way it can be? That's bullshit. It doesn't have to be that way. We can actually have people that represent our will, literally. Or you can have no government, if that's what you want. If you want to live in a society with no government, and you want to have control in your community without some fucking oppressive federal or centralized government control, why can't we have that? Of course we can. Doesn't everybody really want that? Are people around the world enjoying having a central government, whether it's in China or America or Africa or wherever? Does it really matter? Do people enjoy generally the impact of these governments who work for the bankers? No. So why do we have to have it? We can solve every problem. Even the trauma, even the suffering, the anger, the hatred that exists very, very, very understandably as a result of invading and torturing and killing people, even that can be healed.
That's
right. Even that.
Now, that may sound ironic to people, and let me just clue you in on something, ladies and gentlemen. If something sounds ironic, it's probably got a grain of truth to it, maybe an entire beach full of truth, maybe a desert full of truth in it. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Ken O'Keefe, coming in as live from the old empire, and we will be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com on American Freedom Radio. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest coming at us from the old republic is Ken O'Keefe in the UK. Ken, welcome back to the program.
Good to be back, brother. Good to be back.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the programming. I know I've been off for an extended period of time, but let me just explain something to you. When you interview people who are talking about trauma and pain and scumbaggery and horror and terror and something like that for 6 months in a row, you kind of go a little bit nuts if you don't have time off. Okay, so I'm very sorry that you weren't entertained over the Christmas season when you should have been with your family, loving them, caring them, as I did, by throwing an ashtray at them. But the thing about this is, I didn't actually throw an ashtray at them. I'm not a violent person. I just sulk in the car and smoke weed by myself. Okay, that's what I do when I can't handle my family. So anyway, did I just give away a bit too much there? I hope so. Ken O'Keefe is my very special guest. Now we just went through your sort of it's not a waking up story. I've discovered it's actually a growing up story that all of us activists have. We start our life as children. Some of us remain children for a very long time until something happens to you to make you grow up. And then as an adult, you have to choose your life from then on. That's what I found is quite interesting, is that when you're a child, other people choose your life for you. Your parents tell you to go to school. Your teachers tell you and encourage you to do that thing. But nobody ever pulls you aside at 18 and says, hey, you're an adult now. And you go, well, what does that mean? Well, you know how I used to clean your room for you? Yeah, you now have to clean your room. You know how I used to remind you how to brush your teeth, when to go to bed, and I used to prepare meals for you and stuff like that, and I used to take you to school? Well, you're now going to have to take yourself to school. You're now going to have to cook your own meals. You're now going to have to remind yourself when to go to bed, because you are now your own fucking parent. Nobody ever gets that speech, do they? And as a result, a large amount of the population, including me, maybe to a larger or lesser extent, remain, partially at least, children. Because we don't grow up. That's the world in which we live, in which it's not like the prisoners have taken over the prison. It's the children have taken over the kindergarten.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy.
Now, speaking of children, a place where a large percentage of the population are in fact children is Gaza, the Gaza Strip. Now, I have been elucidated that this is indeed one of your biggest issues, or at least this is what you seem to talk on, because you've got a holistic perspective, as any enlightened person really should have. However, there's always a focus. I focused on being a douchebag with a microphone and having fun while talking about scumbaggery. You've seemed to have focused on the Palestine-Israel conflict. It's a big topic. You will be spit on, you will be attacked, you will be hated, you won't be allowed into countries as a result of taking on these issues. That's the reason why those issues are actually so important, because if they didn't actually have any importance, you wouldn't receive so much fucking opposition.
Yeah. Indeed, yeah, Palestine's a good one for that.
And even my friend Max Egan in Australia got jumped after doing a speech about Israel and broke a couple of ribs and stuff like that. And I talked to him just the day afterwards. He just, when you hear your friends after they've been beaten up and they're completely broken in a very physical way, and they're doped up on painkillers because they literally couldn't handle the pain any other way, it touched me in not a good way.
Yeah, and yet when we compare that kind of displeasure with the things that our Palestinian brothers and sisters, our Syrian brothers and sisters, in fact, people all around the world are enduring things that are far, far worse than that. That's a day in the park for a Palestinian, you know, getting roughed up a bit and, you know, his ribs were bruised and whatnot. But the bottom line is, yes, there is a price, you know, for things of value. There is a price, and the price for speaking honestly about Palestine is one in which you can expect to be mischaracterized, villainized. You can expect to have large amounts of money spent to pay people to infiltrate your life and to try and subvert anything that you're doing from right next to you, you will experience a threat of violence and loss of freedom and even your life if you're really good at it. And this is the world we live in, once again. So for Palestinians, however, just not accepting the reality, just that simple act of not accepting is to resist. You are born into an environment where you have little choice. You know, you can take certain paths that will allow you a way to get out of the more warrior aspect of what is happening, whether it be through art or perhaps even, you know, going into religious study. These things offer some respite, some sanctuary. But for the vast majority, and even those who indulge in that kind of pursuit, you are, by the nature of your existence, in a place where the person who is your enemy literally wants you gone. They want that land and they want you gone. And the policies have been that way since the creation of the so-called Jewish state of Israel. That is the reality for Palestinians. And when you have the honor and blessing to have spent time with these people, I've chosen to spend as much time as I could. And I've been to the West Bank and I've been to Gaza several times. And ultimately, these people are amazing. Really amazing. They are dealing with some of the most horrifically unjust and really dark realities that people can imagine, literally to the point where children are routinely blown to bits and literally just in a exercise of pure sadism. I mean, Gaza does epitomize the stain on the conscience of humanity that we have allowed this place to be targeted as it has and punished as it has for so long, and by our so-called best friend and ally in the Middle East, Israel. It's a monstrosity that we have been party to, and until we find the strength and courage to face up to the criminal activity of our government, in the case of the United States, this has a real important angle for you. If you really care about America, do you not realize that American sons and daughters have been sent off to fight wars for Israel? This is all part of a project called the Greater Israel Project, and Israel's meant to expand. It's meant to take up the territory in Lebanon, in Syria, in Jordan, in Iraq, into Saudi Arabia even, and into Egypt. This is the goal, and American sons and daughters have been used as cannon fodder to basically set it alight in the Middle East so that the Arabs would bleed each other. Literally, that's a term that's been used. All of this is by design, and the 22 American service members a day who are committing suicide are committing suicide because they were sent off to fight in an illegal, immoral, unjust war in which they were called on to carry out all sorts of atrocities, including the killing of women and children, and even for some of them, witnessing or partaking in rape of innocent women and children. This is a reality, and we are responsible for it, and when we see it for what it is, you can't help but have a deep love for the Palestinian people. I mean, what they have been through and the way that they have been abandoned and the way that they carry themselves with such amazing hospitality and generosity, it really is something that if you experience what I have and you don't give something back, that is shameful. I will do anything and everything I can to help my Palestinian brothers. When there's justice in Palestine, we will know justice in this world. And if there ain't no justice in Palestine, there ain't going to be any fucking justice for us either. So this is the main reason why I gravitated towards Palestine in the beginning. It was a more of a strategic decision, but it became very personal to me. I have family members from Palestine, living in Palestine, and they are indeed my brothers and sisters. And whatever I can do to advance justice for them, I'm honored and blessed to be able to do.
Now, at the same time, we've got every situation that you look at, especially if you're looking at it through the mainstream media, is a hell of a lot more complex than initially stated. There was a documentary called Control Room, which focused on the Al Jazeera news network, some of its coverage of Iraq, some of its coverage of Palestine and Gaza. During the course of this documentary, they show what the Arab media covers versus what the American media covers. This is, I believe, one of the main reasons why Americans still support Israel and the war in Gaza and stuff like that, because when the story happens in Gaza, before it gets to the United States, it is run through so many filter sets that you could get fluoride out of water with it. Like, seriously. It's unbelievable. Like, I saw one example: a Israeli tank shoots a shoots a building, and there are like 13 children and a woman taking care of them inside, and they all die. And then a whole bunch of people in the neighboring houses get really pissed off, come out, start chucking rocks at the tank, and then snipers kill a whole bunch of them. They kill like 10 people, and the rest of them run away in terror. Now, it comes into the US media, and it says that evil Palestinian terrorists chucked rocks at a tank, and the heroic Israeli commandos defending themselves managed to chase them off. Right? And that's the end of the story. Cut to the next fucking story. And when you see them compared next to each other, side by side, what one audience hears and sees and what another audience hears and sees, you can understand why there are still billions of dollars and a lot of weapons coming from the United States into Israel without any impediment whatsoever, because they keep the truth concealed from the American people.
And not only that, but the same interests that run the media that are lying to us literally own and run the U.S. government, with traitors who've openly defied the U.S. Constitution and whom the American so-called patriot is allowing to continue to do business as usual. So, you know, the situation is definitely a really an embarrassment, quite frankly, never mind disgraceful. But the truth is as well that many more Americans are figuring this stuff out. And despite the lies of the media and whatnot, in fact, the media, the mass media, really at this point is largely irrelevant. Nobody who's serious about seeking the truth seriously looks to the mainstream media. There are plenty of people. I don't even think, you know, let's remember as well that the powers that be, they control the whole thing. They control the courts, the police, they control our governments, they control the whole thing. So I don't even believe a lot of these companies are viable at all financially, honestly. I mean,
I want to give you a New Zealand example here, because it's actually being reflected around the international media as well. Canwest is a private media company, and they had this guy called Stephen Joyce as their CEO. And then Stephen Joyce winds up running for the National Party, they're our equivalent to the Republicans, and he becomes the communications minister, and then he brokers a $40 million bailout for Canwest to pay its unpaid broadcast licensing fees. They were $40 million in the red just to pay their broadcast licensing fees. That's how little the amount of ad revenue they are getting is. Making media is actually not profitable. Here's the entire reason for it, and here's the reason why they sink unlimited money into it, is because it provides an illusion of legitimacy for the ruling elite, all right? This is our tagline. This is what we do. This is what we brainwash people with. Now, those of us in the alternative media, we only tell the truth, and we know how hard it is to make money off of just telling the truth. It's virtually impossible. If you want to shill bullshit for a living, on the other hand, you'll be a fucking millionaire by the end of the year.
Yes, indeed. If you want money, that's the way to go. Basically, become a prostitute and sell yourself in one form or fashion, and that's what we have. The world is run by... I actually, every time I say that, I feel bad, because the prostitute who's working on the street, I have far, far, far more respect for than these prostitutes who literally sell their soul to the devil so that they can pursue a course of self-love at the detriment of everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, well, at least the other prostitutes' customers get something out of the deal.
Exactly. So, I mean, I use the word prostitute because I think it's a much more accurate way to describe people who, you know, worse than selling your body, selling their soul, literally.
Well, the other term is prestitute.
Yeah. I always like prostitute. I've said it for a long time before the prestitute thing I ever saw it. You know, I just feel that that's an accurate way, but prostitute works as well. You know, at the end of the day, these people
tomato.
Serving. Yeah. These people are obviously in the service of the devil, of the tyrants who are running the world. And, you know, they know it, we know it. And that's why the media is not even viable. I don't believe, in your case, helps bring that point home as well. These bastards have an unlimited supply of money. So as long as we allow, and there you go, that's the head of the snake. as long as we allow private banking, fractional reserve banking, this fraudulent Ponzi scheme fucking system, which is exploiting us all and intending to enslave us all and our children, if we continue to allow that system to remain in place, it's a joke. You know, it's obvious. That is priority number one. Yeah, as long as these son of a bitches own the banks and have an infinite supply of money, they can pump out this shit and create literally an alternate reality. That's what we have. I mean, if you're in that realm of watching the mainstream media and listening to the politicians and the experts and all of that stuff, if you're actually in that realm, that is literally an alternate reality. It's very real for the people involved in it. But it has no real resemblance to the reality looking at it from an objective, empirical way. It's a programmed reality. And when you start thinking for yourself again, this is where you start to see the stark difference between what is being projected, what is being presented to you, and the reality. You look at independent media and you start getting this other information. You transpose that against the illusion. And this is what's happening really profoundly, is this gulf is getting wider and wider between reality visually, verifiable, audibly, in every way, intuitively, the reality of what is happening and what's happening to me personally and what's happening behind me, or in front of me rather. All of this stuff is what's being compared to the illusion. And the difference is so stark and so great that people are waking up more and more every day. And for me, again, that's the beauty of it. I'm actually enjoying their bullshit. I actually really love to hear their bullshit, because I know that more and more people are waking up. I mean, you know, it's an amazing fucking embarrassment as well that we watched this shit for so long and didn't see it for what it was. But at least it is happening now in unprecedented numbers.
You just reminded me, just this morning, actually, before jumping on the interview, we found a video in Oregon of Pete Santilli, who's being exposed or whatever, the great, great, horrible person, and him getting thrown out of an auditorium and the whole crowd booing him and saying, "You're not one of us, fuck off," and people throwing shit at him and everything. I'm like, ah! It's great when you see that, you know, your work trying to expose a certain bit of scumbaggery actually has a resonating field. Like, it's chucking rocks into a pool, hoping that eventually the ripples from those splashes that you are making erode away the shoreline upon which this guy keeps his feet out of the water, so that he eventually drowns because of all the scumbaggery they've committed, right? That is the exact same type of thing. However, Pete Santilli is only one guy, whereas we're talking about the entirety of the Palestinians, and we're talking about the entirety of the scumbaggery New World Order that are in, shall we say, very much strong, rigid control of at least the authoritarian class, but the people just not buying it as much anymore, and they're buying it less and less per day. And again, as you mentioned last hour, they need a third world war to distract people from this.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at the policies, I mean, come on. You have to conclude one of two things. Let's just take an honest look at the way our so-called governments are conducting themselves and the decisions they're making and the arguments they're presenting in order to justify these decisions. If we look at that honestly, then we have to conclude one of two things. Either these people are telling us the truth, and they are the stupidest people on the planet, because they're saying they don't want war, and they're saying they want to have a healthy economy, and they're saying they want to look after the interests of the pensioners, and they're saying that they don't want tuition fees to go up. But at the same time, what they're doing is completely the opposite. And to look at this and pretend as if this is going to solve itself, and pretend as if our complicity is not actually the key ingredient to allowing this to occur, especially when we get to the point of finance. I mean, literally, those who are running the world have an infinite supply of money. It's not even about the money. They have all the money. It's about absolute control. And this is a reality that is becoming more and more impossible to ignore, because it's touching more and more people. That's why, for instance, the financial crisis, in my opinion, is fantastic, excellent. You know, the more uncomfortable people get, the more I find that their intellect starts to develop and their perception of reality starts to increase. It's really quite shocking how stupid people can be, willfully ignorant, when they have a university degree, are doing some bullshit prostituted job, whether it's marketing or politics or corporate bullshit or whatever. And these people who have the highest education and whatnot, if you talk to them about issues like 9/11, or for instance, you know, perhaps even the assassination of JFK or the banking system, how it runs and so on and so forth, these people will feed you so much bullshit. It's absolutely amazing, because they have to remain willfully ignorant in order to preserve the privilege they enjoy and the money that they make. And these people are the only ones really left within the elite's minion realm that they have any reasonable control over. The rest of the population is simply not enjoying this whole approach to life. And if you believe that the politicians are simply stupid, okay, fine, you think they're stupid. But if you see it for what it is, and these people are nothing more than minions carrying out orders, the policy is clearly a third world war. How could you conclude otherwise? I mean, what more are you supposed to do to try and create a fucking third world war?
How much have
we been antagonizing Russia? You know, I mean, look at the antagonization of Russia. I mean, how could you not want a third world war if you're doing that kind of stuff?
Now, can we relate this? Because the great thing about knowing this thing called fucking reality is that when you make statements like, for example, they're coasting for a third world war, you can provide historical context. Almost the exact same policies that were being committed against Germany and Japan just before the United States entered into the World War. There were trade embargoes against Japan, which were an act of war. They tried to keep oil out of them. They tried to take over their hemp fields and things like that in the Philippines and so on. On and so forth. They, let's just say, when the United States wants a big war with somebody, they don't commit, or they don't like declare war. No. What they do is they try to piss you off enough that you will attack them, and then all the people in the United States suddenly go, oh my God, we're under attack, completely unaware that they were the bullies in the first place, that they were actually starting the fight, that they'd already declared war long ago, long before they were attacked. That's the same thing that's going on here now, is it not?
It's a pattern. And, you know, if you start thinking for yourself, then you'll see this pattern. I mean, at this point, there's nothing clever about understanding false flags and the way they've been used historically. I mean, we have plenty of examples, and I think largely, you know, I think huge numbers of people realize that. I know huge numbers of people realize this. You know, we can look to all these different examples. To be honest, I'm a little bit bored with it, because, you know, that this is like self-evident that false flags are used to manipulate us into war. Manipulations of all kind, as you say, embargoes. You know, Japan had no choice. I mean, they literally would die as a nation with the finance being completely held over their head and no oil to produce anything. And as you mentioned, the hemp as well. I mean, they were being shut down. You had to fight. And this has been done over and over to carry out these policies. And where are we going with this? I mean, it's obvious where we're going with this. A full-scale third world war would invite the potential for a nuclear launch. And, you know, there's copious amounts of evidence to show that there are indeed underground cities that have been built at huge expense to you and I. But I seem to not have my invitation to any of these underground compounds, and I bet you don't have one either. So these motherfuckers who are really drunk on their own power, who see this rising consciousness and know damn well that they have no chance to endure much more of this, it is unsustainable. They need a third world war, and the policies of the politicians who they own is to carry out policies to instigate a third world war. And yet it hasn't happened thus far, and I believe there's more than one reason for that, but the fact that we are aware only bolsters our chance of eventually reaching a point where we're not sitting under this threat constantly. Because really, I mean, I'll tell you what, if it was to cite one single thing that would be a prerequisite for me feeling good about handing this world over to our children, it is the absolute abolishment of all weapons of mass destruction on every level, it should be seen as what it was, a horrendous tool to manipulate people in mass to kill each other so that the filthy rich motherfuckers who run the show at the top of the pyramid can maintain grip on power. That's the long and short of it, and it's really not complicated. It's not actually complicated. I mean, yes, it takes some investment in time and energy to understand the world, but once you get a few basic understandings down, it becomes very clear what's happening, and ultimately, these policies are leading us towards self-destruction. And I'll repeat, you know, does anybody in the audience have an invitation to an underground compound that's been built at the expense of trillions and is literally able to supply a home and shelter for decades to a chosen group of people? Are you one of those chosen people? Well, I imagine you're not. So is it a problem for you that maybe those that are in power have invited themselves down into these fucking underground cities and are in fact in control of the very politicians who are carrying out what is nothing but pure insanity and self-destruction, especially in the case of America? The American people are being set up for a massive fall, and there is no doubt of that whatsoever. The only thing that can save the American people from the worst of all case scenarios is to wake the fuck up and get your constitutional government back in place. As flawed as the U.S. Constitution is, and it does have flaws, it is a beautiful document in comparison to the codes and statutes that Americans are living under. And it's the same basic system, whether it's America or it's England or any other part of Europe or the West, Canada, Australia.
The Westminster legal system, yeah.
Basically, it's the same system, slightly different characteristics, but it's the same basic system. And this is you know, this is what we're facing. So,
I love the irony of, you know, we're going to destroy the world, and then in order to survive the destruction of the world, we're going to go underground in the dark with the worst pedophiles, psychopaths, and most horrific demonic scum that have ever existed on the face of the planet, and we're going to stay down there for a decade with them. I mean, good luck, buddy.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, motherfucker. You know, that's what you want. Yeah. Well, that's how sick and twisted these people are, and they're running the show. They are still running the show. I don't think that's very wise for us. So,
I'm actually thrilled. There's an old saying: everybody ends up exactly where they deserve to be.
Yeah. It's not so perfectly cut and dry as that, but that's the basic gist of it. Yeah, there are good people who go through a lot of suffering and pain, but I measure things in terms of spiritual existence anyway. I mean, I'm not a religious person by any stretch, but I'm definitely a spiritually aware person. And, you know, ultimately, I think the spirit, we can argue about where it goes, but it goes somewhere. And I'm sure it has something to do with how you express yourself with this blessing called life. If you were nothing but a minion, if you simply bowed your whole life, you never had the strength to face the truth with yourself and the world that you live in. If you were constantly operating on a level of fear, my gut feeling is that you're probably bound to keep repeating that process over and over and over and over until you finally find the strength and will to actually stand up and do what needs to be done. And when you actually start to express yourself with love as opposed to fear, when you express yourself that way, I'm pretty sure that the soul, the spirit, it really starts to evolve and accelerate into what maybe some would call the point where you reach enlightenment. You know, I am not a Buddhist. I am not a Hindu. I'm not a Christian. I'm not a Muslim, and yet I am all of those things too. There's a lot of beauty in these religions. We don't have to fight each other over any of this stuff. We really don't. In fact, we should be celebrating these differences.
I saw this great Facebook meme, and it's like got a picture of a whole bunch of flying saucers coming at Earth, and Earth's like blowing up. There's like nukes going on everywhere, and the aliens are like, so they're having a war over which religion is the most peaceful, are they?
Yeah. It's about that silly, isn't it?
But people just kind of like haven't suffered enough. Like I noticed, like when I got arrested for cannabis when I was like 20 years old or something like that, I lost my entire circle of friends. I lost my relationship with my missus at the time. My career aspirations and everything just evaporated. I got kicked out of university, and now I can't travel ever again. Ever. I can't leave. New Zealand. It's like Escape from Absalom up in this fucking place, you know. And I have panic attacks very occasionally. I'm terrified of any authority figure that has power over me. I can't make outbound business calls, you know. If like there's an intention to get money out of the phone call, I can't make it because of stuff that I did during telesales and everything like that, and employers fucking me over. I can't work for anyone in an employment situation either. If somebody's paying me by the hour or paying me to do a job and stuff like that, I can't do it because it reminds me too much of employment and it reactivates my employophobia. Now, as a result of all that pain and all that trauma and all that suffering and all these fears and inabilities that I now have, I had to make my own career on YouTube and talk radio and try to make sure that the way the world truly works becomes known. Now, everybody else can keep their perception if they want, but my guess is that they've got no fucking clue what real suffering is like, okay? And they can easily sit around talking about fear and trauma as if they have any idea what they're talking about. But to my mind, trauma is a teacher. Fear is a motivator. And life itself is the prize that you get for having those things and experiencing them properly. You need to value your traumas. You need to embrace your fears. And you need to love your life. Everything else is cerebral dribble that will vanish as soon as your happy existence is destroyed by evil, lying psychopaths with no conscience. Now, that'll put somewhat of a damper on any chipper disposition, won't it, Precious?
I think it's fucking brilliant, man. You've taken that fucked up situation and you've channeled it into a show that really is affecting people far more than if the system had just shown you even an ounce of decency. I think it's absolutely beautiful. As you say, embrace the trauma. Look what it's done. I mean, where would you have gone if it was a little less obvious and you were provided, like many of us white folk are provided, that nice little utopian bubble known as suburbia and a decent income and ability to live a comfortable life and whatnot? You know, we end up in a worse place, if you ask me, than all the things you've described, all the things that you've suffered are all great opportunities. Just as you say, the traumas are great blessings. Embrace it. And if it doesn't beat you down, it will end up liberating you. It will end up making you understand a state of existence which so many have no idea. They're never actually being who they really are. They're merely responding to a whole bunch of stimuli which over a course of time has conditioned them to a point where they're practically only regurgitating a bunch of information and not actually coming up with any original thoughts themselves. This is the system as it was designed to be, but it's failing again on so many different levels, like you. Look at it. This fucked up system motivated the hell out of you. You have a great show, your audience grows, and you're independent, man. You don't rely on some fucking bastard boss who disrespects you one day and thinks you're okay the next. I mean, you don't have to deal with any of that shit when you work for yourself. So I think it worked out pretty well, actually.
Well, and that's convenient, because I didn't have a choice in the matter.
You know what? Come to think of it, that's the same for me. You know, when I fucking did my thing and it was all thrust upon me, life was shit, but I brought it on myself, man. I did.
See, that's the problem, especially if you're pathologically honest. That's been my problem my entire life. Vinny, have you got any marijuana on you? Why, yes, sir. No, sir. Three bags full, sir. And it's just like, well, would you like to confess all your crimes and everything like that so we don't have to gather any evidence and then we can make up evidence in court later on anyway? Well, absolutely, sir. Here's my fucking signature. Like, the most naivest, dumb, young cunt you could ever fucking imagine. That was what I was. That wasn't who I was. That was what I was. I changed. I've become a different person because they tried to take, and I think they successfully destroyed who I was. And sometimes, in order to build something great, you have to tear what was there down first in order to rebuild it from the ground up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm actually a really firm believer that trauma, if it was conducted in a really compassionate, empathetic, intelligent, wise way, and I think this is actually part of the ritual behavior of many of the so-called, you know, indigenous peoples, Aboriginal peoples, First Nations peoples and whatnot. We used to have a ritualistic kind of becoming a man. There used to be processes that we went through. And they made sense, actually. They do make sense. You know, some of it doesn't, but, you know, most of it did. And we don't have that now. We just, like you say earlier, you know, we're children and we continue to be children. And it really, a lot of it comes down to that very fact. We don't go through that experience, which more often than not is very traumatic, extremely uncomfortable, oftentimes downright painful or even torturous. But on the back end of that, we end up growing. It actually has a positive function in our lives. We turn a negative into a positive. And that's one of the things that I've really come to enjoy in life. You know, when I am going through hardship, I just know. I know that one way or the other, there's something good that can come from it. And when you reach the point where I have, you know, honestly, I mean, hell, if I'm to pass tomorrow, if Ken O'Keefe is no more tomorrow, fucking A, man, I've lived such a rich life. So amazing. Nobody need cry an extra tear for me. Cry for yourself, man. If you haven't lived free for a day, much less for many years, like I have experienced, wow, man, you just don't even know what life is about. It's there. It's coming. We will all get to enjoy this with a little bit of dedication and hard will, strength and courage. And your experience to me is a story that will be told a million, billions of times over in a different way. Same type of experience, you know, crushing injustice, huge naivete, a lot of suffering, and ultimately on the back end of it, if you turn it into something positive, it will be the greatest thing that ever happened to you. That's been my experience.
That's the essence of alchemy, is transmutation, being able to take one thing and turn it into something completely different. And you know, it's just we have no rites of passage anymore. You are not required to be an adult in order to be treated as an adult. You were required to hit a certain... You have to be on the earth for a certain period of time, therefore you're considered an adult. That's the current mode of thinking. In New Zealand, we have a ritual called the 21st birthday, where in order to prove that you are a man, and in order to prove that you are a mature adult, and you're ready to go out into the world and make your mark upon it, you have to drink 3 liters of beer out of a giant glass in one sitting. All right, that's it. You know, now you're mature.
And that's really true. That's honestly true, isn't it? You know, it really is. This is our birth of our step into manhood, really. There's a lot of tricks the powers that be have employed. I mean, it starts way before that. Hell, the whole birthing process has been turned into a massive trauma that's not a good one, really. It's an unnecessary trauma, you know. Birth should be really a joyous experience for a woman, done in the right context. That's exactly what it is. For women who understand these truths and know how to heal themselves and know about natural childbirth and get themselves in the right environment, and, you know, my wife included. This is the reality. It's not a painful, traumatic experience. It's actually an experience that is overwhelmingly ecstatic, euphoric, bliss, you know, real, the essence of life in the most extreme way, the beginning of a life form on terrestrial Earth. It's the world upside down, you know. They traumatize us from even before birth. They traumatize us throughout our childhood. They traumatize us as adults. And all of these things can be turned into positives because we all have experienced that. And this is the kinship we've got. We've all had suffering and dealt with injustice on one level or another to one degree or another. All of us know this. This is the common thread between us. If you don't know that, well, then you are a part of that very, very small class. And even you may not be getting arrested by the police for bullshit you know, a 20-year-old kid does, or you may not be spending time in prison, or you may not be experiencing poverty, or you may not be experiencing the anxiety of not knowing where the next meal is coming from. But these people who sit in these high positions of power where, you know, money is no object are suffering in even worse ways, if you ask me. Honestly, I feel genuine empathy for these heartless psychopaths who are drunk on their own power and seek material reward and gain and total control over others in a very destructive way as well. Not even total control in a benign way, total control in the most malevolent of ways, the most sadistic of ways. A person or a being that lives that way I feel tremendous sorrow for and fucking empathy for. But it doesn't change the fact they are the motherfuckers who are threatening the rest of us. So it ain't all hippie and flowers and bullshit like that. This has got to be dealt with. And these people, their position, it is not acceptable.
I think in order to remain human when we're fighting these inhuman psychopaths, we have to have that double counterpoint. We have to have empathy for them and love for them at the same time as knowing that they must be resisted and they must be defeated. But not because you're getting some kind of personal gain out of it. It's because they are a threat to the herd, right? Essentially, I look at psychopaths as lions, and I look at us human beings as the gazelle. We have no natural defenses against them. They're far more evil, and they act in ways in which we could never predict, in which case we have very little defense against them, apart from running away or seeking the safety of the herd. Now, occasionally, a lion will get trampled, and it will be killed by the herd, but first the herd needs to be warned. Now, apparently, when there's a big herd, only 6% of the herd actually need to be aware that there is a predator before suddenly the entire herd becomes instantly aware and starts moving away and favoring protection. We will, as a human race, reach a critical mass where the knowledge about psychopaths, how they operate, how they think, how they view us ordinary human beings, suddenly we'll become aware. What will happen then, I wonder? Will we fight them? No. You can't fight a war against those who manufacture the guns. Walking away, getting everybody to safety, and letting the psychopaths fight amongst themselves until they die from it. It is said that if you put a psychopath on a desert island with enough food, water, shelter, everything like that, that he could possibly want, but no human beings to torture, to feed off their fear, they'd be dead in a week. They need it, right? They need our fear. They need our anger. They need our negativity. Don't give it to them. That's why when you go up against them, you do it with comedy. You do it with love. You do it with compassion. You do it with empathy. Okay, they cannot fight against that.
At the same time, you know, I know my Palestinian and other brothers and sisters who are fighting have every right to be so angry that they do not feel love for their enemies. So I have to give a shout out for these brothers and sisters. I understand that rage very, very well. But I would agree with you in essence. I would agree with you in essence that. Getting beyond the hatred, which is all manipulation anyway. I mean, you know, these people who did these things are every bit as much a victim as the rest of us. You know, when you have been so brainwashed and traumatized that you literally carry out acts of extreme violence against innocent people, again, this is not a good place to be at all for anyone. Those who are directly affected by it and the perpetrators of it. We all have a common bond again. So it would be wise for us to understand that, but at the same time, the psychopaths who are running the world, the thing I'm not so crazy about the analogy is that as far as us being the herd and then the lion being the predator being them, is that we actually have all the power. We really do. The only reason why they have this extreme power over us is because we've relinquished our power to them and provided them the means to be able to produce an infinite supply of money. And all we need to do is take away that supply of money, and they cannot pay people any longer to do the things they're doing in the Middle East right now, so-called ISIS. But also all over the world, we have death squads running around every country of the world of any interest. We have people that we pay big money to exterminate others. We are carrying out gross offenses all the time. But it doesn't change the fact that none of this is possible. As I talked about in a previous interview in 2013, we had a perfect example of what power we have when there was a tremendous run-up to kick it off in Syria. And it was, you know, Bashar al-Assad and the Red Line. And let's dissect that for just a second. You know, it was being said over and over that the Red Line in Syria was chemical weapons. This was so blatantly obvious that it's a setup for a false flag event involving chemical weapons that invariably will be blamed on Bashar al-Assad, and that will be the excuse to come into Syria hard and really a stepping stone towards Iran and World War III. And it would have happened in 2013 except for one thing, and that is that nobody bought it. You looked at the polls, and this is the system's polls itself, so it has no advantage in lowering the support. If it has any distinct mission, it is to inflate the numbers who support increasing the violence and stepping up the war in Syria with active participation. Nobody bought it in America or in England and Europe. The approval ratings for an escalation was roughly 9% in America by the official poll. So that's all the fucking paid off people who are doing that, or they're afraid and, you know, saying, yeah, no, I support it. This is the reality. And we had no escalation. So if they don't have our consent, they can't fucking do it. They need our consent. So they have to trick us into doing that. And they came up with ISIS as a response. And you have to give them credit. They created another fucking monster for us to fight. And they made it so real for a lot of people that still there are people who see a need to fight ISIS, and they are oblivious to the fact that we are ISIS. Our best friends and allies in Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Turkey and Israel itself are supporting ISIS on meaningful levels, whether it's providing air cover for them in Syria and Iraq, or whether it's providing medical attention, as in the case of Israel, who's literally given medical attention openly to the so-called moderate rebels in Syria. I mean, this is the reality of our policy.
How does how does somebody become a moderate rebel, you know?
I mean, it's beggar's belief. But the point that I'm making is that we have much more power than we realize. They had to create ISIS in order to fool us again, like, oh, wow, we have to fight that one. That one, we've got to fight it. You know, I mean, it's so ridiculous.
It was marketing, right? Just like, yeah. You know, when the Coca-Cola just released a whole bunch of new brands of bottles and stuff like that with different colors and blah, 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 blah. It's because people got old of the old red Coca-Cola. And so people got bored of Al-Qaeda and this, and Osama bin Laden's dead, so we need a new boogeyman, Well, why don't we just finance him the same as we financed the last one? What a fucking champion move, bro. But going back to that analogy about the herd and the psychopath being the lion, the only reason why the lion's actually able to take down and kill a gazelle is because they isolate them from the herd and they target the weaker ones and they get them away from the protection, okay? This is how you fight a psychopath. Never, ever turn your friends away or your family or anybody who can support you, because they will be you, in fact, your only protection when a psychopath comes from you. That's what I've learned. Go to the safety of the herd every single time. They can't isolate you. They can't destroy you if you're with another person. They're that weak a predator that they cannot deal with more than a couple of animals at a time trying to resist them. Now, the reason why the media tries to show people the things that they do is they're trying to make people like me and yourself and anybody else who knows the reality nuts, all right? You look at this and you see the lies, you see the blatant bullshit, and it starts to drive you crazy if you don't hear alternative media saying what you're thinking, okay? If you hear people that are saying what you are thinking, it validates you and it stops you from thinking, does everybody believe this? Am I fucking nuts or anything like that? It's like, no, actually very few people believe it, bro, and they're hyping this bullshit up just to lie, to make you feel uncomfortable, to make you feel like you're alone, to isolate you so that you can be easier controlled. That's why they do it.
Mm. Yeah, and here we go again. For all their power and all their might, they're losing. They are losing, and they know it. And so they only accelerate their process of trying to instigate a third world war. I think it's an amazing irony and a beautiful one at that. You know, the truth of the matter is that everything we need to do, in your analogy, you know, the herd, everything the herd needs to do is more than there. Our situation is much better than that scenario. It really is. We don't necessarily have to cling together like a school of fish or a herd. What we need to do is express ourselves in the way that our heart and a reasonable amount of intellect, critical thinking, provides. And that's what's happening. I mean, the fact that people resonate so much with what I say is a perfect case in point. I mean, you know, I know what I say, agree. And what I'm saying is definitely not in line with the official version. It's extremely hostile towards the bullshit that's being pressed, and it's, you know, a few years ago was considered way more extreme, certainly 10 years ago, but today, you know, anybody who, if you, I don't care how extreme the things are that I'm saying, I can back up everything I've said. If I make a mistake and someone can call me out on any factual error, I'll have enough humility to say thank you very much and be grateful for the correction. You know, at the end of the day, it is what it is. And the world as we see it today is only a reflection of our own inadequacy, our cowardice, and our ignorance. And as more and more people break free from that bondage imposed by ignorance and cowardice, as we break free from this, it's inevitable that we will find ourselves in a better situation, because it is inherently within us to realize that the more we cooperate with each other and the more we respect each other, the more that we actually do good towards our brother and sister, the more we benefit. It's directly proportionate. And the more that we fight and kill each other and, you know, allow ourselves to be used as pawns in a game, the more fucked it gets. And it'll be even worse for our children. So it's not a complicated game. It really isn't.
It's just about us being part of a family. Families take care of each other. They love each other. They try to understand each other, or at least ideally speaking. There's a lot of truth, as I know, and even maybe one myself where your family doesn't understand you. They think that you're crazy. They don't want to really hang out with you. They don't want to listen to you. They dismiss everything that you say. And they express disappointment in you. But that's simply because they, again, haven't suffered enough. They haven't found their strength because they haven't had to yet.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, very, very, very accurate description, I would say. That's why, again, I actually really enjoy the hardship and the draconian bullshit, like in Australia, where it's mandatory now to vaccinate your child. And if you are on benefits, well, you ain't getting no benefits unless you poison your child with vaccines. Now, this is horrific, and it is going to cause a tremendous amount of suffering, as it already does. You know, we look at the autism rates that are very well publicized at this point and where it's going and the direct connection to vaccines and the knowingness of what poison they are putting in that shit to inject in our children. That forces people to engage. That's the silver lining in it. That's turning a negative into a positive. If you're going to force people to inject poison into their kids, rest assured there are going to be, I don't know what the numbers are, but there will be significant numbers of people who are absolutely going to refuse. They are openly going to defy the law. And this is going to come down to a challenge. And I'm quite confident that people in the end are going to realize that if you really want to entrust the government and the medical establishment, which has got such a long list of criminal activity that has resulted in incalculable suffering and death based on fraud, keeping the truth away from people about things like the cures for cancer. I mean, cancer is one of the easiest thing in the world to sort out, and this is being held from people all around the world, from the medical establishment and the pharmaceutical companies that make big money. But more importantly, they poison us and they degrade our ability. And ultimately, only in a very polluted, toxic state can a tyrant really rule over us. When you liberate yourself from that kind of toxicity and actually understand the principles of natural healing, you know how the body operates and cooperate with it to give it what it needs, and actually start to develop a spiritual awareness and exercise your spiritual awareness by pursuing knowledge and wisdom, challenging yourself, seeing how consistent you are with your values, you know, all of these things result in a sequence of events which is the absolute death or birth of us into a world that is something that we can be really proud of. We are literally going to die in mass, and who knows how large the numbers will be if we allow this to continue to its logical conclusion, which is a third world war and likely nuclear annihilation. Or we're going to literally wake up and realize that everything that the powers that be have, all that power that they have, is a direct result of what we've relinquished to them. And it is that simple.
Now,
we can take back the power to do what we need to do tomorrow if we want. And we will.
That's right. Okay, Ken O'Keefe has been my very special guest, ladies and gentlemen. In this world, some people choose good, some people choose evil, and some people choose to sit on the fence and see who will win. We're just trying to burn the fence down. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ken O'Keefe, what's your website there, buddy? We've only got a couple of seconds left.
Yeah, I've got a plan. It's not been laid out altogether, but World Citizen, www.worldcitizen.solutions. There's information there. We've got something going in 2016. Support it if you can and share it. It's growing. It's got massive potential. And if we make it so, it's going to be a powerful game changer in 2016.
Indeed. We'll see you again sometime, folks.